Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to the Paperweight Entertainment Podcast, your home for all things Marvel, DC, Star Wars, and so much more. Join Derek and Ian as they tell tales to astonish along this journey into mystery. Grab some snacks and settle in because Paperweight Entertainment starts now. Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Paperweight Entertainment Podcast. I am your host, Derek Hoskins, and tonight we are going to talk about Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore. With me, as always, is my good friend and yours, Mr. Ian Torrance. Ian, you ready to talk Wizarding World?
I am. That's all you get.
That's it? That's all I get? Awesome.
I am.
That's all right. We'll leave all the color commentary to our very special guest tonight, friend of the show, coming to us all the way from the Indiana Ministry of Magic, Mr. Sean Winningham from the Caption Life podcast. Sean, welcome back to the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me back. So if I'm part of the Indiana Ministry of Magic, where does that make you guys part of?
We're not invited.
We're not invited.
He was like coming all the way from Indiana. I was like, wait, where are we coming from?
From the Ministry of Magic, I said.
Well, I'm saying at first when you said Indiana, I was like, is that where I'm from?
Not anymore.
I can see Kentucky from my house. People from where Sean is from don't count us as Indiana.
Yeah. Yeah.
I do.
Well, I appreciate that. Oh, man. Well, all right.
So we're technically what? Kentucky, Anna?
Yeah, we're
that's what people often refer to this place as.
To that area. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the actual term, though, for some circles. I forget what, but I think some people use, like, that's the actual description of that area for something. I don't know if it's, like, a higher ed admissions or something like that, maybe.
Yeah, I just think it's funny because they're like, well, Kentucky, and I'm like, but we're from Indiana. Yeah, but Kentucky's right over there. You're near it. I'm like, okay, but if I'm near death, I'm not dead. You know what I mean? So
close enough.
Being near something doesn't make you...
Well, speaking of near death, let's talk about the Fantastic Beasts franchise, because I feel like this is a franchise that is very near to death, unfortunately. And I say unfortunately because I actually enjoy these movies, so I'm excited to hear what you guys have to say about them. Again, we're talking Fantastic Beasts 3. It is actually doing decent. I want to give a quick mention of how it's doing at the box office right now. It is sitting at 196.5 million worldwide, so it's making a decent amount of money. But we'll move straight into it. I don't know why I always do the box office numbers at the beginning of the show, but I did that for our first movie review, and that's how it will stay here on out. So Sean, since you are our illustrious guest, and I'm not sure how you feel about these movies, what did you think about this movie overall?
So I will say that I am a casual fan of the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, and that I've read the books and I watched the movies. I enjoy them. I am married to a Potterhead because she has read them, you know, ever since the first book has come out. She's absolutely loved that world. We have some friends who are absolutely immersed in that world, and they'll have like long discussions about Harry Potter and the books and the movies and stuff like that. And my two cents is always, well, I like it, you know. For this movie, I think it did a good job of kind of redeeming itself from what happened in the previous movie, because I know a lot of people were kind of upset with what happened in that movie for a couple of reasons. And I think this one kind of helps steer the ship, even though it's still kind of riddled with controversy from a lot of different angles outside of the screen. I think as a movie in and of itself, I think it did a really good job of kind of correcting where it left off from the second movie. And I think putting it back into like a pretty good place to try to make the other two movies a reality in the future. So.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there about the controversy, and we'll get into that later on, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. That this really does have an uphill battle, even when right before it came out, Warner Brothers kind of put out there, yeah, we're going to see how this one does before we commit to that full 5 movie run that we talked about to begin with. Ian, you just watched the first two Fantastic Beasts before we went and saw this one. So being somebody that everything was so fresh, what did you think about this third one overall?
You know, it wasn't, It was good. It's hard for me to like distinguish how I felt about this one without talking about the first two, because like you said, these are new to me.
Right.
I like Sean, I've watched all the Potter movies. I've read not all the books. I'm on Order of the Phoenix. Mm-hmm. And I love the movies. I love the books more now that I've actually like started to read them. And I know like it's a typical answer for somebody to be like, oh, the book's better, because of course it's going to be. But these are like way better. And that's not to shit on the movies at all. The movies are still good, but the books are just way better. So I think like mm-hmm. my expectation going into the first Fantastic Beasts movie and where to find them, I didn't know where to find them. But now I feel like I still don't know where to find them. And I'm not sure where Newt finds them. Because, you know, Derek and I talked about the fact that I get that if you were wizard born, then you could see certain things that, you know, the muggles can't see, or the nomadges. I don't like that term.
We're American.
I'm sick of muggles.
Hashtag America.
I get you can see things, and we'll get into a gripe of ours here in a little bit, and he knows what I'm talking about. But I don't know. Like I feel like it was a lot for me to be like, to go from Harry Potter in that universe and then watch this and be like, oh man, that these stories like are supposed to, so this is supposed to be like way before. I get that, but like there's still characters from the Harry Potter franchise in this movie, or at least they're mentioned. You kind of see cameos, so it's kind of really funny to me that it's just like, it's drastically different. Like everybody mm-hmm. is able to like kind of like teleport mm-hmm. through the sky, which I think is different than having the ability to actually what's apparate. That word, apparate from one location to the other without a port key. So mm-hmm. So I like them, don't get me wrong. Again, it probably sounds like I'm just like, and another thing, but I just was trying to like take all that out of my head and just appreciate it for what it was in front of me. But it I was being kind of like a Potter snub about it, and being like a snob about it, and being like, well, there's no way they could do that. Well, that's not how it is in the other universe. And why are they doing this? So I tried to like simmer that down and just watch it and appreciate it for what it was. And with that being said, I like the third one a lot. I have some gripes about like the second one, and I'm glad they kind of corrected it in this one. One being Queenie in the second one, who was a lovable character. I loved her. I'm just a fan of hers in real life anyway. And I just mm-hmm. thought it was funny that it was just like Grindelwald's just like, hey, you should come over here. And she's like, yeah, that's a good idea. I don't know. See, why not? I'll come over there. It's like, well, right. wait a minute.
But she's torn at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah. She was torn. Oh, man, I should probably stay here as she's walking toward him.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I just don't know if I could. Like, well, it didn't take much convincing at all. And Derek and I had this conversation. I get that, like, I think it was executed poorly in the second one to where it's like, yeah, but she was doing that because she wants to marry Frank. His name's not Frank.
Jacob.
I keep wanting to call him Frank. I don't know. He just looked like a Frank. So Jacob, his real name is not even Frank, so I don't even know where I'm coming up with that. Jacob, don't call him Frank. So I just think it's funny. Like, she wants to marry Jacob and she wants to live in this world. And Jacob's like, no, we can't for this reason. It would never be accepted. And she's just like, but if I join this murderer,
then we
and could. He murders everybody, there's not going to be anybody around to tell us no. But yeah, but what if Jacob dies? I think you're missing the point here. So yeah, yep. with that long explanation being said, I think the third one did a good job kind of correcting everything. I think it was a little too long, but it's still enjoyable. Still enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. I'm probably going to be, like I said, the odd man out here. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is my favorite Wizarding World movie in general, because I do love the books. I've read them multiple times and I love the movies as well, but you always lose something in the adaptation between the two. I can mm-hmm. enjoy them separately, but with Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, I mean, there was a textbook that they kind of sort of put out, but it was a new story and I really liked the characters. And, you know, Crimes of Grindelwald, I didn't love. I didn't hate it like everybody else did, but I enjoyed it. But what I liked about this one is I feel like they were very smart in hiring an actual screenwriter to help J.K. Rowling, because while she is a phenomenal novelist, she's not a good screenwriter. The problem with both of the first two movies was the fact that she was writing it like a book and it didn't work. Right. Everything was strange and awkward. And so I really think that they fixed the issues with the screenplay for the most part. There were still some issues with some convoluted storylines and trying to pack a little too much in my opinion. But overall, I thought that this was a solid sequel that fixed a lot of the problems from the second one, but couldn't quite elevate to the level of the first one for me. So those are my overall thoughts. I didn't say at the beginning, so I'm going to say it now. We're going to go full spoilers. So if you haven't seen it, thank you for listening to this point. Turn us off. Go watch the movie. I do recommend it. And come back and listen to the rest of us. Make sure you check out Sean, CaptionLifePodcast.com. Go to PaperweightEntertainment.com. PaperweightEntertainment.com. I hit my mic. Sorry. And come back and listen to the rest of the episode. So spoilers from here on out.
Our website is actually just thecaptionlife.com.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
The caption.
Oh, it's okay.
No, no.
Now people are going to go to thecaptionlifepodcast.com and be like, that Sean is a liar. Does he even exist?
there's no such thing. It's not real.
Right.
Oh, my. Well, now I have to just quit the entire episode because I messed up the guest. The guest
right, website. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody. See you next time. No, anyway. All right. So moving on into spoilers. Again, like I said, I think that the screenplay was a lot better this time around. And I want to go ahead and jump into the controversy surrounding the movie, because I feel like that's really the biggest plot point, unfortunately, because there's so many controversial things happening in this. First off, we had Mads Mikkelsen replacing Johnny Depp after all of the allegations of abuse from Amber Heard and everything that happened with that. We have the ongoing situation now with Ezra Miller. He just got arrested again in Hawaii for assaulting a woman, you know, being drunk and assaulting a woman in a bar again today. And then also we have all the controversy with J.K. Rowling herself with the trans community and some of the things that she has said. So with the constant uphill battle that this franchise is facing, I'm going to ask you, Sean, do you think that the strength of this installment is really going to be enough to propel it forward to get a full 5 run? Do you think it's going to get one more after this? Or do you think they're going to say, you know what? The story was close enough. We're just going to wrap it up and call it done.
I think at minimum they're going to do a fourth movie, but I think best case scenario is probably going to be, they're just going to do a 4 and done type of thing, just because of all the things that you said. Right now, it's kind of a miracle that they got it to this far. And then, as you said, Ezra Miller, like, they might have to just write his character out.
Which I think they have an out with in this movie. They were hinting at it. So I think they could do it pretty easily.
Yeah. And it's not like he is in any of the other movies or books or anything anyway. So it's not like they're going to mess with canon at all if they write his character out, or, you know, just kind of say, you know, he's recovering from the last movie,
right,
so to speak. But I think with where they left it at this movie, and the fact that, again, there's nothing that really holds anything into canon other than what's been mentioned in the Harry Potter books, which hasn't been a whole lot other than I don't want to say a whole lot. Just what hasn't been shown yet in the movies that hasn't been mentioned in the books is pretty much the duel between Grindelwald and Dumbledore. And so you could definitely do that in this next book and kind of wrap it up. And I think that might be something that they're going to head towards, unless, you know, some sort of miracle comes out and, you know, they get like a lot more viewings and box office earnings and stuff like that. I just don't see that happening right now with the trajectory that they're at and everything like that. So I think I would be surprised if they do a fifth movie, but I think they'll definitely do a fourth movie just to wrap things up. And they'll just write out Ezra Miller's character if he's still having these problems. You know, I think it's safe to say that Johnny Depp, you know, no matter the outcome you know, of his trials and stuff like that. And he's not coming back with that. So yeah, I think best case scenario, they're probably going to make one more movie. I'd be really surprised if they finished the full five. So,
and I don't know that that would be a bad thing. In all honesty, when they announced that this was going to be a five film franchise, I thought that seems like they're going to be stretching a lot here. After watching the first one, I thought, okay, they could get three or four out of this maybe, but five seemed like a lot to begin with. Ian, do you think that they're going to make it all the way to the full five, or do you think they're going to cut their losses and maybe do one more?
I think they may. I don't think he will. I also think they need to move the Flash movie up before he murders somebody. And then they seriously, what's wrong with this kid? Like, I don't understand, like, why... Like, you know, you're in the public spotlight, like you're in the public eye, and everybody's going to know, like, if, even if you spit on the sidewalk. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why you would continue to do. Everybody's got their demons and their problems, and people mess up. And I respect that. But constantly it's the same issue over and over. You break into somebody's house and then you assault somebody on the street, like not even a week later. Right. And not to mention like the few things that have happened in the past with him, like, jokingly choking that woman, you know.
Yeah,
jokingly.
Yeah, choking her and taking her to the ground.
Choking her all the way to the ground.
I was just joking around. Yeah.
Got you good.
There are definitely red flags way before these events, you know.
Yeah, and people just kind of
So, not to get too much into this topic, but I think it's kind of dog shit that we remove Johnny Depp from things, but Ezra Miller can do whatever the hell he wants. So I don't agree with that. I know that the allegations have been very serious with Johnny Depp, and that is ongoing now as we speak, as we record this.
Right.
Trials, I believe, are still going on currently, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So
Johnny Depp just testified today, I think.
Yeah.
Was that today? Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah, today or yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I get that, but like, I don't know. And I agree with what you guys are saying. Even if they did go for fourth and fifth, even if they did remove Ezra Miller, it's not going to make a huge difference, because I mean, he did play a big part in the first three movies, but I mean, how much more of this are we going to like do? I find it comical that as Colin Farrell, he can't do anything against him in the first movie. But then like when he reveals his true self, he's much more powerful. So I'm just like, I don't know if he was just dumbing it down so people didn't know who he was.
Right.
You had said before, Derek, that they had to hit a certain plateau to even consider going for a fourth.
Yeah, they didn't come out and make like a specific statement. Okay, we have to make this amount of money and then, you know, we'll consider doing it. There was I don't even think it was an official statement what I saw. I think
making little to nothing off the first two, though, right?
They were both profitable. Neither of them were a flop, but they did not make the money that they expected them to. And on top of this, you add in the fact that Warner Brothers has been in such disarray over the last, you know, 5-10 years, to the point where now they've led up to this Discovery buyout. And I think that they are going to, I think Discovery is going to come in and say, okay, what's profitable, what's not profitable? We need to get rid of some of this, because they've already come out and said their plans for the DC universe. And I think they're going to do the same thing with this, where they're going to look at it and say, this is no longer profitable. There's no sense in continuing this, and finish it out. I do think they'll finish out the story, because it does have fans. And like I said, it's been out for less than a week now, and it's got, you know, it's made almost $200 million. It's doing okay, it'll make its money back. It's not going to be a flop. But
why
I agree
with, do you think this one is doing so well compared to the first two?
I think that it's been 4 years since the second movie came out, and there are fans of it. There are people like me out there that really enjoy it, and the Wizarding World fans love the Wizarding World, no matter what it is. I've got friends and family members that are diehard fans. I'm a diehard fan, and you know, we're into it. I mean, when we went and watched it, I brought wands with me. You know, they're Potterheads will come out for these movies. They'll complain about them later, but they're going to go and spend the money and watch them. So I think that that's why it's doing a little better. And also, I think that there's a curiosity. Mads Mikkelsen has made a name for himself of being a very compelling villain. people wanted to see what he was going to do versus what, you know, Johnny Depp did with the role. And also the fact that they straight out came out and said Dumbledore is gay, and this is the first time in any of the movies that they've actually that they admitted to an actual relationship, and he said in love. It was clearly spoken that I was in love. You can
be bisexual.
That's fine. They had an intimate.
J.K. Rowling has come out and said that Dumbledore is gay.
Yeah, she has come
way out before the movies. Yeah,
right. But this is the first time that they've actually come out on screen and say it, to the point where China made them cut out two lines of dialogue. I mentioned that. I don't know if you'd seen that report, Sean, that China only would allow this movie to be released if they cut out two lines of dialogue. The one in the diner where he says, "I was in love with you," and then there's one other one later on in the film. But I think that's a big part of it. Dumbledore is a popular character. Mads Mikkelsen's a good actor. People wanted to see what he would do. And so that's it. Sean, do you have any other ideas of why you think it's doing as well as it is, considering the negative response that and all the controversy surrounding it? Negative response to the second one. This one is actually doing pretty well with critics and viewers so far.
Decent, yeah. Anyway. Yeah. I know the main issues that my wife and our friends had with the second movie is what you had mentioned before, and that a lot of people didn't seem to like the fact that, you know, Queenie, you know, went over to the dark side, and there wasn't an explanation for a little bit, because at the beginning of that movie, they made a point to say that Grindelwald has kind of that power to influence people.
Right.
So some people think that may have been like what was, you know, what was happening, what was getting at that. But the other thing was the whole reveal at the end of that second movie of Credence being a Dumbledore. Mm-hmm. And people were just saying, like, you know, that was going way against canon because there was no mention of another Dumbledore sibling.
Right.
Which is true. And then in this movie, we found out that it is still true, but he's a Dumbledore in a different way. So I think that's why this one has done well. Because I think people are, you know, just like you said, they're fans and they want to see how they explain that reveal. And I think people are wanting it to get corrected in that way. But just as you mentioned, it's been 4 years since we've had a Wizarding World movie. So a lot of people are really, you know, looking forward to it and wanting that experience, especially coming from the pandemic. I mean, movies have been kind of another meaning of getting away from reality, from what we're facing, because that was something that was taken away from us as well too. And so trying to get back into that also is it's funny, it's getting us away from the reality by bringing back a normal reality that we used to have in a sense. So I think, you know, that's another thing that's kind of playing at as well too. But yeah, I think a lot of people are just kind of curious to see how this was going to kind of correct itself. But just like you said, I think Matt, like, people were just kind of curious to see how they're going to handle Mads Mikkelsen being the new face of Grindelwald. And we could talk about that a little bit later in terms of how that panned out and everything. So,
well, yeah. That's a perfect segue. I wanted to go into that next. What did you think about how they handled it? The fact that I thought that they were going to make mention of it somewhere in the film that he looked different. I thought they were going to have some magical reason for it. Maybe it was he did a spell because his face was too recognizable, but they didn't. They treated it like a lot of recastings where this is who it is. You're just going to get used to it. You know, all the characters will act like he is. And so I was really surprised that they did that. And I was happy that they did, because I think that that's the more mature way of handling things, where you let the audience be intelligent and just expect the audience to think, okay, this is the same character, they can deal with it. And I think that they did a really good job with it. Did you think that they handled the transition well?
This I'm going to disagree and say no, for this reason, is when you have a portrayal of a character like that that has very distinct physical features. So when Johnny Depp portrayed him, he had a different colored iris. His hair was very distinct in terms of color and style.
Right.
So when you get Mads Mikkelsen, who doesn't even have the different color irises, iris eye, however you know, whatever the plural is, and the hair, the only semblance of it is that he has a white streak, like, you know, like a reminiscent of Rogue from X-Men. Right. I think at that point, you have to address that. I think if they made him have those same characteristics that it's Mads Mikkelsen playing Grindelwald with the same kind of characteristics, I don't think you have to explain that. I think you can let the audience be intelligence. But when you make that much of a jump where it's not even resembling the same character,
it's a drastic difference.
It's a drastic difference. At that point, I would argue if you're going to go that route, you should have just brought Colin Farrell back and did that, you know, and not that Mads Mikkelsen didn't do a good job. I think it's more telling about it's a penalty. I don't want to say penalty. Sorry. It goes against the success for him because he's playing against all the things that's been leading up to his involvement in it. And so it's not so much his portrayal has been the problem. It's just that the showrunners and the film runners and everybody involved in the production and all that didn't think through, I don't think, in terms of how this will look as a series of films. And so now it's just going to be kind of this weird. That's why I think they just need to finish out the fourth film, because I think, you know, the more, you know, time passes, like, well, what's Mads Mikkelsen or anybody else that's in the film going to do? I think that's why they just kind of want to wrap up and be like, let's make some more money, but not take any more chances and just get it done. And I think that's part of the problem is that when you have that huge of a difference in character appearance, you have to address it. Otherwise, if you don't address it, it does become, you know, the elephant in the room because of that. So, but I think if they, even if they left the hair the way it was, but, you know, kept the irises, you know, the same from when Johnny Depp was portraying him, I think you could have done that where you didn't have to explain it and just move on and all that. But I think they should have done that in this movie. So,
you know, you're really lucky that you made such compelling, good points there, because I have no problem with kicking you off the show for disagreeing with me. So you're lucky that you're so well spoken and you make good points.
Thank you. I become an acquaintance of the show.
Just a rung below Trent Persinger is where you're going to be. I don't know. Maybe Ian, even with him. But no, you made some really good points. And I see where you're coming from. I do have a problem with film companies feeling like they need to spoon feed changes to people. But you,
right,
with the fact that it's so different, I do think that his iris was a different color. I think it wasn't as noticeable because he didn't have stark white skin. I could be wrong, but I was trying to look at it. Our theater doesn't have real super HD, so I don't know if it was different or not. But if it wasn't,
even the trailers or the posters, I didn't really notice it, you know.
Yeah, maybe I was just hoping that it was there. I don't know.
I feel like that's something you would notice,
right?
I feel like that sounds something you guess. I think that would be something you notice.
Ian, what about you? Do you think that they should have kept it the same way or explained it a little better that he didn't look the same?
I agree with Sean in the distinction of the iris eye, the iris.
Betrayal. the utter betrayal. The audacity.
If you're gonna change the iris, so first of all, I guess it's not really super important, but it's the little things that did kind of bother me at first too, because I was just like, I don't care that you changed him, but he has no features whatsoever that resemble you know, the Johnny Depp version. And I'm not saying it should have been him to a T, but I think there are even scars on the man's face that weren't in this one. So if you like the eyes, I never heard them explain like why they were like that in the first place. Not that they had to, their eyes, but I agree they probably should have kept that part at least. I don't know why they didn't. If they have a reason, it hasn't been obvious to me. However, I agree with Sean, and then I kind of disagree because I think you kind of said it too, but I think it's kind of like, I don't want to say foreshadowing, it's like suggested that, you know, just like in the first movie where Colin Farrell was, I think Gray was his name, detective or
Graves.
Officer.
Percival Graves.
Percival Graves. That guy, Colin Farrell. So there was like obviously no real explanation for that until the end of the movie when you find out that he's for a better use of a word, charmed pretty much. And I think it kind of goes without saying that they could have been the same thing in this one, But I to the same point, I could agree, like, oh yeah, that's great. He charmed his skin to look completely different. We know why he did it in the first one. We don't know why he would do it now, because everybody still knows who he is.
Right.
Right.
So there would serve no purpose for them to not explain, like, hey, why you look different? Like, you know what? I change it up every now and again. You know, I'm like Doctor Who. So I agree with what you're saying. There definitely should have been some sort of explanation in that. It didn't kill the movie for me, but I was right. kind of like, are we not going to like address the fact he's completely different and everybody mm-hmm. knows exactly who he is still? Like, nobody's going to mention that at all. So it was kind of a pet peeve as well, but not altering.
Well, you guys have changed my mind. You made good points. Yes, they should have.
Really? Because I've been actually correct. Jumping back and forth.
I do. With the points that you brought up, I do think they probably should have mentioned it.
Mention at least.
I'm easy right. to please, and I have to remember that I'm pretty easy to please when it comes to filmmaking. And sometimes it's detrimental to critiques. But, you know, staying with Mads Mikkelsen, I actually enjoyed him better than Johnny Depp. I believed him more as a charismatic leader that people would follow. Johnny Depp, with his eccentricities and his look, looked like a villain. I mean, he just straight up looked like a bad guy that nobody would ever follow. No intelligent person would ever follow Johnny Depp. But Mads Mikkelsen was charismatic. Yeah, but that
he gave at the end of the second movie was definitely like, he teetered on both charming yet evil.
Mm-hmm. And right, I think where Mads Mikkelsen came off more charming.
I like Mads Mikkelsen as an actor, and I'm not saying he did bad in this movie, but he was very one dimensional.
Like, I swear to God, what's happening? What's happening tonight?
I thought he was. I thought he was.
I bring like Sean on here, and all of a sudden you turn on me. I see how it is.
I've always been against you. You know
true.
That.
It's true.
No, I just, I don't think that. Like, I don't think he showed too much emotion. I thought he was very like straight. I don't think a man smiled or grimaced or anything the entire movie. It was the same expression the whole time. Just. And then, like, when he's like running for leader of the world, he was even like, I want to be the leader. And there was no big speech until mm-hmm. the end. And then when he started to, I'm just like, he sounds exactly the same. Like, there's no emotion in this man whatsoever.
I will say that in this movie, it was Mads Mikkelsen playing Grindelwald as opposed to Mads Mikkelsen portraying Grindelwald, right? In terms of, you know what you get from Mads Mikkelsen because he brings that certain kind of style mm-hmm. and that it's I wouldn't say it's quite one dimensional like what Ian is saying, but it's he plays kind of the same kind of character in a lot of movies, which is not a knock on that at all, because obviously it's successful and it's very compelling and things like that. But, you know, when you look at the man, you see, you know, villain, just like what you see him from, you know, Casino Royale mm-hmm. and the Hannibal show and things like that. I mean,
don't forget your favorite MCU movie.
Are you not a big fan of that one?
It was a good movie. I'm not a fan of Doctor Strange as a character. Like, okay. And it stems from the comics. Like, I just never had any interest. So when they say they were doing Doctor Strange movie, I was like, eh. I'm like, I'll go watch it because it's an MCU movie, but that's about it. But yeah, same thing there, you know, like, yeah. And even I would say even in Rogue One, like, even though he was a good guy, he had kind of a sinister appeal to him, you know, I think the biggest thing that is holding him back from being able to really fully immerse is because of the fact that he was brought halfway through.
Right.
I think this might have been a completely different conversation if he was Grindelwald from the first movie on. So,
right.
So is it safe to say not a huge Doctor Strange fan, but you prefer his the version of him on the Venture Bros, Dr. Orpheus? I don't know if you've ever watched that.
I've not, no.
Oh, what? Man.
Now you're going to have to send me links.
Oh, God. It's great. Don't go in there. I had Taco Bell for lunch.
It's an Adult Swim cartoon from about 20 years ago that we can't let go of.
I'm gonna have to watch
it.
It was
so great.
Yeah, it was excellent.
And they make fun of a lot of like the Marvel characters for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, they've got a lot of Marvel character parallels in that show. But anyway, before we go way too down that, say one more thing. We'll go down a rabbit hole and just start quoting.
Sorry, Derek doesn't like it when you have a free will on the show and talk about other things that have nothing to do with the topic. Banter is not welcome here.
Chaos is not welcome on the show.
No. Oh. Go ahead, Dad.
Hey, I told you you could go. You could have one more thing. I told you one more.
I didn't want to cut it off. I don't want to be.
Oh, mommy and daddy are fighting.
We will discuss this later when our guest is gone. Okay. You and I are going to have a talk.
Oh my goodness. Sticking with actors. We're going to move on. Sticking with actors, since we talked about Mads Mikkelsen, even though I feel like he's got less and less of a role to play, they're trying to continue to make him have a role in these movies. Eddie Redmayne is a delight in my opinion. I really love the quiet, reserved nature of Newt. I think that he plays him very much as somebody like very well. I mean, on the spectrum is the only thing I can think of to say. I think that he's made that choice, and I really find him just endearing and likable, even if he doesn't necessarily really need to be in the plot. I think that they're kind of forcing this character to continue to be in these movies when they want to make it about Dumbledore. But Eddie Redmayne is a delight, and I think that his interplay with everybody in the cast is great.
I think he even mentions that in the first and second movie about how not a lot of people really care for him.
Right. Yeah, people don't like me. People.
Right.
So I don't know. I enjoy Eddie Redmayne. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy that I feel like it's forced. You guys think that his character feels like he's being put front and center when the story doesn't necessarily need him to be front and center anymore?
I think it's less about him and more about, because it's a Fantastic Beast movie.
Right.
Because every movie, like every international, you know, wizarding crisis that happens in these movies somehow gets miraculously tied into some sort of magical creature that has to, this either at the crux of it all or needs to come in and save. So like, you know, in this movie it was the Chilling, basically, right?
Right.
And so I think at that point, I think it's more about the beast and the character, and because I think it makes sense to bring his character in when you have those creatures in there, but they're writing the creatures in to make a Fantastic Beast movie.
Right.
So I think it ends up being a little bit more of a plot device, and that his character, you know, that's how they bring the character in and kind of say it's a Fantastic Beast movie for that reason. When the more movies that's being made, it's getting, you know, further away from it being a Fantastic Beast movie and more of a Wizarding World series in that regard. So and I will say this, not to get down another rabbit hole, but I love the fact that the textbook made an appearance in this movie. I thought that was great.
Yeah.
That was fantastic.
I think Newt is still a very important character to keep front and center. Not just because of the fact that like he's a controller of the Fantastic Beasts and he knows where to find them. But I think it's very important in the fact that, so even going forward, that was in the previous movies, even without the beast, I feel like there's got to be a better word than just calling the foul beast.
When you say beast, I'm thinking of Beauty and the Beast,
right? So
kill the beast.
So I think it's very important to point out, like, he seems like a pretty powerful wizard.
Yeah, absolutely.
Without these creatures. Ah, creatures. That's a little bit better. So I feel like he still deserves to be front and center, because even though now that the blood or the love pact between Grindelwald and Dumbledore is now broken, I don't think that you move Dumbledore to front and center and put him on the front lines, because this is still a professor of a very popular wizarding school. That's a very important school for their world. So I can't see him just being able to run out and do that. So he does need a guide that he can put out there and do these things for him. as like a second in command, so to say. So I do think it's still important to keep Newt out there, and I think he still stays relevant.
Right.
And I think the creatures come into play because he has such a good chemistry and a good relationship with these creatures, and you know, like they seem to like build a bond with him very quickly, and I think it incorporates into his fighting style and how he doesn't just use straight magic. He incorporates these creatures, like in the I think it was the first movie where he had the little thing, like the yogurt,
the
like
swooping the, evil.
Like, yeah. I said yogurt for some reason. I meant ye.
Yo-yo.
So I'm just thinking of food. So he, you know, he uses them to his advantage. And I think that's important. I also find it kind of funny in the first one, all they did was try to escape. And now that they don't do that anymore, I don't know if he had a pep talk with them or what's going on. But I think that whole situation of putting that world inside of that case was pretty cool in general. Oh, yeah. How he could just go down in there and hold all these creatures. But yeah, I mean, I think he's a very important character, and I think it's, if you pump out one or two more movies, he is relevant, and it is I think he's important to this.
He's important to the story, but my problem was Sean hit it on the head, the fact that each movie they're forcing some kind of fantastic creature, some kind of magical creature, to be the crux of what's going on. But not so much Crimes of Grindelwald. They had things with the creatures that I thought was a little silly, but that shoehorning in of the chillin' in this movie, there could have been anything, any other ritual that wizards used to use to pick a leader. It didn't have to be some super rare magical beast. And I think it would have worked just as well with the story, maybe even better. So I feel like the reason why I'm wondering if he's really necessary is because they keep shoehorning in these creatures to keep him front and center. I think that the character himself is a very important character. I think it's a really interesting hero. It's a protagonist we don't see a lot. You know, the very mild-mannered hero that's very compassionate and, you know, a really loving, caring person instead of like an action hero that you're used to seeing. So I think he's very important. I just think that they've got to stop shoehorning magical creatures in there as a reason, and instead lean into what Dumbledore said in the second movie, where he sees something is wrong and just does, you know, goes to fix it. Or he asks himself if a thing is right, and that's his motivation. I think if they would lean into that instead of the fact that, oh, we need him because we had to shoehorn a way to get this magical creature in there, I think it would do better for the story, in my opinion. So we talked about some controversy. We talked about some actors. Ian had a gripe, and I wanted Ian to get a chance to get this gripe out of his head because he's been thinking about it for a few days. And right now I think he got a text.
No, he is trying to turn off the automatic updates because my computer is going to try to update in 14 minutes.
Oh no.
So I was trying to be.
So we got to finish in 10.
We got 10 minutes before.
Well, Windows no, I was trying to be. I was trying to be like. So he's literally like. He'll literally call on anybody else before me until he sees me like try to do something important. And it'll be like, Ian, do you want to talk now? I'm like, God damn it, are you serious? Like, I'm trying to save us here.
You think he's a teacher or something?
I know, right? I didn't even raise.
Pick on the student that isn't paying attention.
Isn't paying attention. I'm just like, yeah. He's called. He's asked you every question first, which I'm okay with. And now he asked me, and I'm like, man, I'm trying to hurry up. Now I have 13 minutes. So I'm trying to Google how to turn him off because I don't know why. You can ask Derek. My computer does this like once a week. It'll say important updates. I'm like, it's not. It doesn't change anything, so I don't know why it's doing this.
All right, well, you got 13 minutes. Throw your gripe out there, and we'll try to wrap it up here.
Or, since I don't remember my gripe and I don't know what you're talking about, how about I try to turn these off real quick?
Okay.
Is there a cancel button?
That's what I'm trying to find, yeah. It's just like, you got no choice. You need to be updated. It's Windows 7.
Oh my gosh. All right. Well, Sean, now I don't have a question to ask you. I was going on to complaints. Do you have any issues that we haven't really talked about? Any nitpicks? Because nitpicks are always fun to talk about.
Right. Yeah. No, I think we hit most of them. The only one that is an understandable missed opportunity is just not having more of Tina in the movie.
Yes.
And they haven't really explained why, but my guess is because the pandemic scheduling conflicts is probably what it is. But I was happy the fact that they were able to at least work her in some level. I will say that when she was like randomly showing up on the screen, it was like, oh, what? Like, I almost forgot about her. So that mm-hmm. just seemed kind of random. But I'm glad that they pulled her in for that final scene. Otherwise, I think if that was like the only time we saw her, I'm like, you could have just left her out of the whole movie. Like, that wasn't significant at all, because she's just like watching the screen like, oh, and like that was it. Like, that didn't contribute to the plot.
Right.
By any means. So like that's my only gripe. But I think it's understandable, and it's just the reality of it. So if they do a fourth movie, you bet that they'll make sure that she's in it. So
yeah, because the chemistry between her and Eddie Redmayne is a lot of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Because they have this really interesting, nervous, awkward energy.
Yeah, I was going to say how awkward they are.
That is
right.
It should be off-putting to look at, but it's kind of cute.
Mm-hmm.
And like I like to see them together. And their scene where they're walking, where she walks down the street before the wedding, and they mm-hmm. have their interaction, was a really great scene. I mean, it was a short scene, but it was really good, and it showed how much I did miss her being in the movie. Because right. while I was enjoying the story and I wasn't missing her in the moment, when you get to that, you're like, yeah, that is an element you missed.
Right.
Yeah. And so I don't have any other nitpicks, but I do have to gush for a moment. Dan cool. Fogler as Jacob Kowalski should just be the star of his own franchise. I love that character
mm-hmm.
more than members of my own family. I think not my immediate family. God. But my kids and my wife are amazing. They don't listen to this.
You mean like a third cousin? What do you mean?
Don't worry about it. Ian knows way too many of my family members to say anything.
He's going to start going through the list.
Yeah, I know. But no,
let's figure this out now.
I really enjoy Jacob Kowalski. I think it's so mm-hmm. much fun to have a non-magic person to be that audience surrogate, seeing all these things for the first time and new things. And the fact that he got a wand, and his wand was actually modeled after the Pottermore wands. So like, if you mm-hmm. go and do the sorting in Pottermore and you get your wand, it is one of those, you know, slightly crooked, you know, shaft and everything. It's really good. Roll your eyes at me again.
I just love that whole scene where he's like, this is, you know, this is really dangerous stuff. Like, how'd you get it? Got it for Christmas.
Yeah.
that was just a great line that they incorporated there. I love that.
Derek, sorry, go ahead, Sean. Sorry.
No, I was gonna say I agree. I think that's something that is really neat that they did with these movies that we didn't get to have in the Harry Potter movies, is having a muggle nomad. Yeah. But having, you know, someone as one of the main protagonists in there as a way to kind of experience the world vicariously through them, I think is really cool. And it's interesting because he was really floored by it in the first movie, and it seems like every movie he keeps getting surprised by more magic that he wasn't aware of. Same thing with Harry Potter. So you got to mm-hmm. see that through the kids' eyes, but since there's no, you know, kids as the main character here, I think that was kind of a good way of being able to enjoy that moment through the eyes of somebody in the movie. And we didn't get a whole lot of that in this movie, but there were some times like, you know, oh, and all of a sudden he was doing magic through, I forget who was doing it.
The Lally.
Someone was doing it. Yeah,
Lally or Lally or however they pronounce it, the Ilvermorny professor, who was also a delight, by the way. I didn't recognize that actress at all, but I really enjoyed her character.
Same here. Yeah, I didn't recognize the actress. I don't think I've seen her in anything before, but she did a great job in this role. And honestly, I think when they wrap this up, I wouldn't be surprised if they're if they start thinking about creating a series about the about Ilvermorny or the American Magic
School. Yeah, Ilvermorny.
Yeah, Ilvermorny. Sorry. Yeah. Because I think they talked about how that's going to show up more in the fourth and fifth movie. So if they only do a fourth movie, I could see them maybe toying with the idea of like, you know, we know that the Wizarding World is still a success in a sense. And so maybe this is something that we might want to explore. But yeah, her character was fantastic. I really loved it. Yeah. Loved her role in it. I loved the actress and the character herself. And I think it was just fantastic. But yeah, Jacob is great in terms of being the embodiment of the audience for the movie.
Yeah. And they were really smart.
The book pages was really cool for him to like run up.
Yes.
And her to run up and meet him in the middle. I thought that was really cool to build that little bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The new bits of magic that we got to see. I always enjoy when they're able to come up with some new visual for magic in these movies, because we've had 8 Harry Potter movies and 3 Fantastic Beasts films. And it's all the same type of magic, but they've found new and interesting ways to show that magic in each film. And I think that that's a really impressive thing that they've done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another reason, like, you know, like we're saying, why I like Jacob so much is because you get to see him. And every time he takes a sip of the giggle water, just makes me grin.
Well, Derek had watched the trailer and we were talking about it, and he says, you see Jacob had a wand? I said, no, I guess I haven't watched that trailer. And he said, yeah, Jacob had a wand. So then we started talking about, like, Derek thought he was going to be a squib. And luckily, they didn't go that route. I'm glad they didn't.
Right.
Not luckily. I think that
wanted him to go that way?
I do, for a couple of reasons. One.
Okay, go ahead.
One, and we talked about this, you know, Ian and I were discussing it. Jacob should not be able to see Hogwarts at all. According to the whole story of Hogwarts, is that he should not be able to see it. When a muggle sees Hogwarts, they see a moldering pile of rubble or a moldering ruin that says danger, keep out, or unsafe, or something along those lines. He shouldn't be able to go in there because he shouldn't be able to see that there's a walkway to walk into this place. And so if he's completely non-magical, you know, Dumbledore can't remove that enchantment from somebody. That enchantment is so intense that any muggle in the entire world would not be able to go in there. It's powerful defensive magic. And so how is he there? How is he able to go inside? How is he able to interact with anything going on there? He shouldn't be able to see it.
I think the argument can come into play with the fact that he has experienced a magic world in the first two movies, though. That maybe, and this is going to be loose, because like with any rule, there's always exception. And right. I think that's how they can argue that, is that because he has been immersed in the magical world, that some of these enchantments probably don't work on him, because it works for, you know, muggles who don't have regular or intense experience with the magical world, whereas Jacob has. And so it may not be as strong enough to do that for him. So,
but I think the muggles can still see the magic. They're not supposed to be able to actually. I thought Hogwarts was just
I think like
charm, so to say.
I think they said like their brains will interpret it to be something completely different when they see it.
Well, yeah, but like remember, like in the second movie, when and in the book for the matter, I think they go in more detail in the Harry Potter Chamber of Secrets book when they're flying the car overhead. And it was like a huge deal because they said that it put them at risk, and some of the muggles actually saw it and like took a picture, and like it was in the paper and everything.
Right, but then none of them got to go see Hogwarts, so you don't know if that affected them in any way.
I know,
way.
But I'm just saying that I think they could still see certain things that they shouldn't be able to see. I was just saying, like, with his not to shit on everything that Sean was saying, I'm just saying like his point to being like, well, Jacob seeing what he could see was probably why he saw Hogwarts. And I just think that I don't think that that's 100% accurate in my opinion. Like, cause like I said, I think that they can, muggles can still see. And just like, in Azkaban, when they bring up, a wormtail, a Peter Pettigrew, the only thing that left was his pinky, and like it wiped out like a bunch of muggles. And then didn't they have to go through and like wife everybody. People. Yeah, Bolivia, everybody that was there for that. So you know, you see what I'm saying.
Like, and it could be that. And I'm going to go down a deep dive rabbit hole here and show some of my nerdiness, but you know that's what this podcast is for. So who cares? When Pottermore was a big site before J.K. Rowling had all of her controversy and Warner Brothers kind of pushed all that down, and she went and did a handful of articles about wizards in America, mm-hmm. and this whole long ordeal about how American nomadges versus British muggles were harder to fool when it came to magic and enchantments because descendants of, you know, magic users have been like interbreeding with muggles to try and breed out the magic. But that's like the second Salemers from the first movie, the Credence's family, his adopted mother, they were like descendants of people that were originally witches and wizards that mm-hmm. had bred hatred. And so the idea was like the night bus would not work in America because the nomadges would see it because they're not as easily fooled. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if maybe that's why she wrote some of that stuff, because she knew that she was going to be writing Jacob being able to see through some of the enchantments other people couldn't. And I don't know. And maybe it's just a plot hole and I'm reading too much into it. But, you know, again, that's what we do. That's anybody with a nerdy podcast. That's our thing. We deep right. dive into speculation that is not necessary.
Irresponsible.
They wouldn't have to obliterate all those people if they.
Well, they're all British.
See it.
They were all British. They're British people are stupid. I don't know. We actually have a fair amount of people that listen to UK's listening. We actually have a fair amount of people from Britain. I do not hold to that idea that British people are stupid. You're actually quite intelligent. God save the Queen.
I'm trying to say.
Oh my gosh. Tell me you're not British by telling me you're not British without telling me you're not British, right? God save the Queen.
I just don't think you would have to obliterate all these people.
Well, I'd hope not. Obliterate means to destroy.
Yeah, but I mean, in the first Oblivion, movie,
I'm just messing with you.
In the first Fantastic Beasts movie, though, they had to do that because all the muggles saw that. And so they had to use the beast to do that.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying. But I think they could see certain things.
Right. Yeah, I think it just comes back to the intensity of it, though. Like, I think if it's something like Dumbledore's, what's the light thing?
The Deluminator.
Yes, thank you. I think that's probably something that, you know, they won't pick up on. But like, the more intense the magical experience is, right, the more they're probably going to notice it. Is my guess. But again, this is just me rationalizing. This is not.
Does it, Derek?
Does yes, it make that's sense a, that's, in this fantastical that's a, world that's been created out of imagination? Really?
The power of Christ compels you. Oh, does it, Jay? Does it compel me?
Oh, man. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's a plot hole. Maybe it's not. And maybe they'll say that he is. But there's also been like all these really fun theories that that Jacob is actually like a descendant of Helga Hufflepuff, and there's characters named Kowalski that are in like Harry's year at Hogwarts. And mm-hmm. so I just wouldn't be surprised if they said, well, yeah, he's actually a squib. That's why he can kind of handle this stuff. That's why. And that maybe that's why they allowed Queenie to marry him, because mm-hmm. that's another thing that they didn't bring up in this. Like, they're not allowed to marry nomadges. And yet here they are in New York at his bakery, a witch and a nomad getting married with the head of the magical law enforcement for Makuza attending the wedding and not arresting anybody.
But if it turns out he does have powers, wouldn't that make him more of a mudblood?
No. I'm saying no powers, but if he's a squib.
Oh, you don't think he should? Okay.
No, but if he's a squib, then he would have magical family somewhere, and that would explain why he'd be able to see through some of the enchantments. Because like Filch is a squib, and yet he can see everything going on at Hogwarts. So
what they should have done is had Grindelwald at the end of that movie go up to Jake and be like, you're a Dumbledore. Right.
Just really mess with people's mind.
Right? Yeah. How are they going to explain this one?
What did you think about the explanation that it was actually Aberforth's son? I did not see that coming at all. That was
And my wife was telling me this. She said that she goes deep dive into a lot of theories as well, too. She says she's never actually saw a theory like put that out.
I hadn't either.
So I think a lot of people were like pleasantly surprised because they're like, oh, they didn't think about that. But then that makes a lot of sense without toying with the, you know, the sacred canon of the stories as well, too. So I think it makes a lot of sense. I think it's a really cool angle for that because what I liked about this movie, we didn't touch about this, is the guy who plays Albuferth is a great actor. I loved him in a lot of things. But I think we got to see a little bit more of the sibling interaction between him and Albus, and that we didn't get to see. And that development was like the first time that I think in the movie that we saw them kind of bonding together as brothers in that brotherly love, whereas before it seemed like they're always antagonistic towards each other,
right?
And so it's kind of nice to see that kind of bring them together to say, you know, since the death of their sister and everything like that, like, you know, they're kind of coming together to take Credence back home and take care of him.
What a sad story, by the way.
I know. Right. I mean, it just the whole thing
such
is
such a sad story because your brothers are being jackasses.
Oh, I know. Oh, my God. Well, yeah, especially how they're both like how Dumbledore explains it. You know, he's like he was a jackass, but then that was a bigger jackass. And then she died.
Yeah.
It's like the world's like, you know,
I don't know if it was my spell or his, but either way, she ain't.
I know.
Right.
Right. So, like, but I thought
Albus, tone it down.
Exactly. But I thought that was actually a really cool way of telling the story. And I think it works on a lot of different levels. So I really like what they did there, to be honest. I think it was really cool. And it opens up a lot of opportunities, I think. So,
yeah. And I'm glad that they went with that because A, it was impossible for like impossible timeline wise for him to actually be a sibling.
Mm-hmm.
Just based on what has been told.
Right.
And then the only other option is like really far fetched, fantastical. Like, I don't know if anybody listening to this is you know, watches the Super Carlin Brothers on YouTube. They're a really big thing. They do a lot of fan theories, and they had this crazy fan theory that Credence was the Obscurus that was taken from Ariana, that when they used the sorcerer's or the philosopher's stone to try and remake a body, and it ended up being a baby boy, and then they hid the baby boy on the boat. And then the baby got switched, and then that was the Dumbledore, and that's why he's got it. I was like, good God, like the leaps you have to go through to get to that. And then that's not really once digging, did I think it? About the fact that Aberforth would have been like 16 during that summer. Yeah, he knocked up a girl in the neighborhood, and then she left.
Right.
That it's made like so the... much. It was so much easier, and nobody thought of it.
Yeah. It's just funny because all these fan theories, like as fantastical as they are and interesting, it just ends up being another Always Sunny in Philadelphia moment where Charlie's doing that, you know, crazy, right, you know, conspiracy board trying to figure out what it is, and the answer is so simple.
Right.
But I mean, it's I'll say this, it's not that what they provided here in this movie isn't interesting. I think it's very interesting, but the elaborate theories, I think, is very, very interesting in that like I want to hear more about that. I don't subscribe to it at all.
Right.
But I want to hear more.
I want to hear about it. I'll watch every video you put out about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. So.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so, I think I've heard that theory as well, too. So, or my wife heard it and told me about it. So,
right. But yeah, I think that it was the only way that they could have done it, that it was a satisfying explanation that made sense. It doesn't break canon. I think it was very smart. And the fact that, like we said at the beginning, that he was dying, that's an easy out for them to get rid of Ezra Miller if they need to. And we don't have to worry about it going forward.
Right.
So
part of me wonders if they planned for that. Like, part of me wonders if they kind of saw the writing on the wall and they're like, let's kind of write this story just to give us some options.
Yeah, because I don't know when they finished filming this. I can't remember when they wrapped it and, you know, what kind of reshoots they had to do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Ezra Miller, the first time that was real public was in 2020. So, I mean, they had a lot of time that they could have done some reshoots if need be.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
I don't know. Well, it's going to be interesting going forward to see what they do with that.
Oh yeah.
Ian, you have any other thoughts, man? I have exhausted all of my points that I wanted to hit.
You've exhausted me too.
I know, buddy. I'm sorry. That's what I do.
That's okay. I still love you. No, I mean, I think we kind of hit on everything. I think that was my gripe was
the Jacob being able to see Hogwarts.
Yeah, but I think that was like a conjoined cry between the two of us. It wasn't just like me just being like, hey, wait a minute.
Right.
Well, the other part,
no.
The other part you had an issue with, I think, was some of the magic, like them not being able to apparate. They had to use a port key to transport, right?
Well, no, not necessarily that, because it was only certain people. Like, I guess, like the teleporting they were doing constantly is different from apparating, because apparating would be
right.
Like me going from here to, I would say Kentucky, but that's
they right were doing kind of that Voldemort Death Eater, like flying alongside.
Yeah,
that was supposed to be something that only Voldemort could do.
Right.
Which I always laughed about, because is that more impressive than apparating? I mean, if I could fly or teleport, I think I'm going to pick teleport. I mean, flying would be cool.
Here's the thing. And you also got to remember, this movie was set in like what, like 28? 1926, yeah, 28,
something like that. 27, the ballpark.
This one, I think, was 32.
Was it 32? I didn't
pay that much attention. Was the first
one was 26?
Yeah, the first one was 26. Yeah.
So yeah, I think this was late 20s, early 30s, and then Harry Potter is set in I want to say late 90s, like 98.
The last book was 98.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I thought the first story.
He was born in 1980. So the Deathly Hallows takes place in 98.
So with that being said, I think it could have been much different back then, to the point where like it may have been like much easier because people like could teach it better, and now like maybe it's frowned upon because like Voldemort does that, so nobody else should be able to do that because it's kind of considered like dark magic. You know what I mean? Like if we're talking about like light side and dark side powers, like in Star Wars, yes, I'm going to compare the two. it's like, you know, you could do this, but you're not going to, because then you would be associated with that. Mm-hmm. That's like how you turn to the dark side. I'm definitely pulling this out of my ass. I don't know if it's a real thing. I don't know if that's like the mindset of everybody. It'll be like, oh, you can't do that. And apparating is so much different, because teleporting from like doing the thing that Voldemort does from here to like me going to Taco Bell is much different than from me sitting here and then appearing in California, like apparating. Right.
Distances, yeah.
Nobody
yeah,
realizes because yeah. they don't know where Ian lives. Ian lives about 150 yards from Taco Bell.
I think
not even that much. Yeah. Not even that. Maybe like 75 yards. I'm way off.
The best part is like I live right next door to a Mi Viejo, and then like two buildings down from that is a Taco Bell. So I'm in heaven over here. It just draws me over like a cartoon. I just start floating across the like the pie on the windowsill.
Yeah,
the smell wafting over. So. Yeah, it is different, and I think that's why they like Newt had to every time he grabbed Jacob, they had to use the port key, because although Newt can do that like little like Morbius thing, only much better than what Morbius did it, he can't fully apparate, and I know like that's a special skill, except for at the end of the one movie where like 48 people did it right outside, they just bamfed into the air. Like they were being raptured.
Yeah.
But yeah, oh my gosh. For the most part, that is not. So I guess what I'm saying is like I don't really have a huge problem with that. And then like some of the spells they were doing so freely, but I mean that's incorporated in the newer stories too, that some people's magic is so much advanced that they don't have to yell Abracadabra or anything like
that. Well, and these are all adult wizards too, and that's something that I've had to remind myself of. It's like, well, why are some of the spell casting different than Harry Potter? It's like, well, Harry Potter, you're dealing with a bunch of kids that are learning. These are all adults.
If you remember correctly, and
you know I do.
Prisoner of...
I probably won't.
Goblet of Fire. You will remember when I say it. Mad-Eye Moody was doing spells without...
Yeah.
He was just moving his wand and doing stuff, so... Mm-hmm. Even though that technically wasn't Moody. But still, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. You know what I just realized is a character that's missing from this movie, from the second movie, And maybe I'm not remembering what happened in the second movie, but Nagini was in this movie.
Yeah, Nagini wasn't here at all, and I wonder.
Yeah, what and they didn't mention it at all.
I wonder again.
Maybe with she this turned movie, into
snake. With this movie being riddled with controversy, I know her character was controversial as well too.
Was it really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't read all into it, but I think because of the role that the character Nagini has, and the fact that they casted an Asian woman came with a lot of Asian stereotypes, negative stereotypes with it. So I wonder if that played into it as well too. But yeah, I mean, think about it, it was a huge deal to have Nagini in there. So I wonder if they just kind of left her out because of what happened in the second movie and all the other controversial things that has happened too. So let's get away from the controversial stuff and keep Ezra Miller in here.
In all honesty, until right now, I forgot about Nagini completely.
I did. No, I me too, until 2 minutes ago. Yeah. I don't know why it popped in my head.
That's because nobody said her name like Nagini.
Baby's hungry. Dinner.
Man, Ray finds all kinds of soupy, creepy, whispery and as Voldemort. Gosh, he was creepy.
Especially when he was that little baby.
Oh, my God.
Wormtail. Wormtail had those little creepy hands.
All right. Well, I think we're probably good to wrap this up. We've been going for a while here. Before we do any kind of outro, Sean, you want to plug your show, your social media, anything like that?
Yeah. So our show, The Caption Life, you can find us on thecaptionedlife.com, and Caption Life is spelled CaptionedLife. And all of our social media, we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. If you just look up our username, Captioned Life, we use the same username for all the socials. So that's where you can find us online. And in terms of where you can find the podcast show, you can find it on the website, and we're on most of the podcast platforms. So Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, most of the major ones that you listen to, we're probably on there. So.
Yeah. And if you have a hard time finding Sean on TikTok and you follow me on TikTok, just click on any of the multiple stitches or duets that I've done,
which I enjoy. Yours is a lot of fun. I really do. Derek did another one. Yes.
Every time I see one of your videos, like, oh, I want to stitch that. It's getting creepy at this point. I need to stop. Like 70% of my videos are just stitches and duets with you.
Ian's going to be like, is this a third boyfriend that Derek has?
I'm getting a little concerned about you.
What can I say, man? Sean's got good content. It's easy to engage with. So definitely go check out The Caption Life. Follow them on all the social media. You can find us at paperweightentertainment.com. If you need to contact us at all, it's contact@paperweightentertainment.com. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. And again, I keep banging this drum. We will be on YouTube. I promise it's coming. we still have our giveaway on Twitter going right now. We're trying to get to 500 followers on Twitter. We're giving away a Paperweight Entertainment t-shirt with the incredible logo designed by friend of the show, Trent Persinger. So make sure that you go on there if you're not following us on Twitter for a chance to win a pretty sweet t-shirt. And with all that down and out of the way, we just want to say thank you very much for listening and for all of the support. Sean, thank you for being on here. We appreciate you as always. For Ian and Sean, I have been Derek. This has been the Paperweight Entertainment Podcast, and we will see you next time.
Yay!